This is the PubRight Podcast, a service of the Arbortex community.
So I have with me Keith McGinnis from Review Publishing, and you've started down an interesting road from traditional publishing to some XML sort of in between spot.
Right. You know, it's interesting as I was preparing, you know, getting together my notes and stuff and thinking about what we've done over the past few years relating to XML, I kind of realized that XML, we've woven XML into way more parts of our business than I think was originally intended. And it's kind of been an XML free-for-all for the last couple of years, and we're really just starting to see the benefits of it now.
Excellent. So where did you start and what were you intending to do?
Sure. The first times that I started really hearing about XML and the publishing workflow was probably 2003 or 2004 at some of the newspaper publishing conferences, specifically with respect to PDF. And I really didn't understand what was going on at the time, but probably around that time, we had switched, or maybe a year prior, we had switched from a literal cut and paste of our newspaper boards to go be photographed and printed to a fully paginated process where it's all done digitally, originally inside Quark, and then we decided to make the transition to InDesign in 2006. So I started researching that in 2005, and that's really where we began standardizing on a PDF workflow. A PDF is basically what goes to our printer, so we can control all aspects of how it's rendered. And I started, you know, researching into InDesign, and what I thought at the time was XML integration. What I realize now, a couple years later, is not truly XML, but rather Adobe's implementation of XML. And the real goal for doing that at the time, we realized that we needed to merge our online workflow for publishing our newspapers online with our print workflow. We had two completely separate, you know, not talking to each other workflows and the staff to go along with it. And we kind of realized, you know, whether it was next year or a few years down the road, we probably couldn't afford to keep operating these two completely separate workflows. And I think at the time we were actually saving print workflows to HTML from Quark, using BB Edit to open those, strip out whatever crap was in there, and add HTML tags, and then when we switched over to InDesign, the point was to specifically be able to export as XML, and then use XSL to translate XML tags from the styles inside the print layouts into HTML tags. And then those final individual stories or page layouts could essentially be copy-pasted into an online CMS, and once saved would be rendered as HTML. We thought that was a great step at the time. In 2005, we were like, oh my God, we don't have to hand code every page. You know, the web team was like, wow. But it was we were still manually picking through every story, every file. Review Publishing, we had, I think at the time, four main newspapers. We're down to three now. We do Philadelphia Weekly, South Philly Review, and Atlantic City Weekly. We have a couple of ancillary products, special issues and things like that go along with those. So when you think about it, you're taking, about 20 or 30 stories per issue three times a week and hand coding them, or even exporting to HTML and cleaning them up and posting them online. It was taking three people, at least 8 to 10 hours per issue to get everything online. And, we kind of thought to ourselves, wow, there's got to be a better way to do this. Right. And we really thought that Adobe, I believe Adobe calls it the live edit workflow, which uses InCopy, InDesign, and a final output of PDF to kind of allow everyone to collaborate in the workflow together for print, which was still primary focus at the time, and then essentially export to XML, use XSL to reformat the stuff. And we were really successful in doing that, but it left us kind of realizing, wow, we probably could take this a step further and automate some of this stuff getting online instead of us still manually publishing it online, but we didn't have the web publishing system at the time to deal with it. And, traditional editorial departments really, I'd say very traditionally would work with something called an editorial front end, which is basically a database system that tracks your articles and your artwork and your photographs for the editorial team to use to put together the book for print. And that concept of an editorial front end is very much from the print workflow. What we see today is those editorial front ends are basically just becoming web publishing systems. Those databases have moved from in-house behind the firewall to out-of-house onto the internet, where there's this huge store of information. And we kind of skipped the step of having an in-house editorial front end. We went from no front end to just the web publishing front end.
Wow. So let's talk about where you are now.
Okay. So this is where it started to get exciting. In 2007, we decided, you know, it's time to ante up and roll out a new web publishing platform that was really going to be the central focus of our whole workflow once this, you know, kind of vision all came to fruition. We had made the transition to InDesign, so we now had access to some sort of XML to get our data out of print layouts so we could repurpose it online. And we started down the path of rolling out a content management system called Clickability. Clickability is a completely hosted software as a service or SaaS solution. These guys are out of California with data centers, you know, duplexed in the Midwest. It's basically MySQL databases with Java, Apache web server, and Apache Velocity templating. The Apache, you know, most people are familiar with Apache web server. People are less familiar with this Apache Velocity open source project. And it's basically just an open source project for a templating language. So the system that we went for is very open, and it truly is XML at its core. They have well-defined schemas for bringing XML in data in and out of their system. And it just is really flexible. We kicked off that project about 13 months ago. We launched PhiladelphiaWeekly.com on it in March, and we're actually launching AtlanticCityWeekly.com on it this coming Tuesday. And we're really excited because we've seen some great things we've done with Philadelphia Weekly we now want to bring to all of our properties. And basically, you know, getting onto Clickability allowed us to kind of complete the loop of now we take our print layouts at the end of the print process, export them to XML, run them through an XSL to reformat and change things where we need to match Clickability schema. And then we just drop the stuff on an FTP server, and Clickability sucks in these XML files, automatically creates the content items, stores all the data, puts them into a in-progress status, and notifies the editor that the content's ready to be published. That's huge. I mean, that was the time that people were taking to reformat this stuff and manually put it in the CMS was nuts. You know, for Philadelphia Weekly alone, you're talking an 8-hour process for two people. Now it takes one person less than four, which was a huge step in the right direction for us because we're going to multiply that across all of our products. Because we were a traditional newspaper company, you know, we have three editorial staffs, a centralized production department, and marketing for all these products, but they basically still all had their own workflows. But our web people were our web people. Like the couple web people we have, two full-timers and a part-timer, did it all for the whole company, where each newspaper had its own internal staff for doing print. So we really knew we had to have serious efficiencies. We have near 80 people putting out those three print products. We have three putting out the website. So that idea of automatically getting our articles into the CMS, so then editorial can then go in and do what we call webifying, you know, add links, add content, embed videos, add more photographs or higher res stuff that didn't fit in print, was really great. And it allowed us to shift that content management back to editorial, where in the prior 5 years, much of what went online, how it looked, where it fell, really was on the web team to do it, and no one in editorial had the skill set, wherewithal, or care to really worry about how the website looked. So we're able to take, like, you know, some of our professional art direction and content management skill set and really maximize that online and kind of focus the web team on the utility of what they do, which is, you know, making sure our content gets delivered. And they're not so much worried about, you know, how it looks necessarily from day to day. So it allowed web to focus on what they do and the content folks to focus on what they do. And it really just resulted in very efficient publishing when those weekly newspapers come out. You know, one of the exciting things too we did is the opposite direction. We did print to web, we just discussed, and we did some web to print as well. You know, specifically utilizing Liz to basically take our event data that's in our website. It's the only place it's stored. Editorial pumps it right into the website databases, so it's viewable online. Our audience can come and add event content online themselves. And then once a week, we have an export that takes all that event data and puts it out in a custom XML schema for us. We're able to pick up that XML file off an FTP, run it through an XSL, import it into InDesign, and we auto lay out our event sections for the newspaper. We actually created a process to do articles as well, so that an editor or writer can write in our web system, publish it online, and then pull it out into InCopy for print flowing as well. No one's really started using that in editorial yet, but we figured while we were building the event data export, we might as well make it so that you can export articles as well. Because, you know, in the future, we really, you know, and this is a big thing in newspaper and print publishing right now, the central storage of all of your content is going to be this web-based system. And, you know, for us, we print weekly newspapers. We're not a daily. But the idea is that all the content goes into the web, whether it's published live online or not before it goes in print is determined by editors. But when it comes time to print the newspaper, you know, you're essentially pressing the button and out spits your product kind of ready to go to print. And that's the dream. We've only done the event section and prepared for articles. You know, we're growing with time in our editorial department of understanding of the system and utilizing it. But I'm very confident within 12 to 24 months, we'll get to a point where the vast majority of content is written for web in the web system first and is kind of reverse published out to print. It's something I call the cross-publishing workflow. Reverse publishing really is confusing. But basically, you could take your print workflow and put it online and put your online stuff and put it into print. And you want to do it as programmatically as possible. XML Absolutely. And XSL are the things that made that possible. Without it, I don't know how we could have ever accomplished this.
That's completely true. Since I started doing this project with you, I have been looking... We've got a whole bunch more customers now who are print focused, where the print is their product.
Right.
And they're all moving toward this sort of black box published to paper as well.
Right.
So, and that's what you're looking for. That's your future.
Yeah, really. I mean, anybody who's in print these days probably wouldn't describe themselves as a print publisher anymore. Everyone's a media publisher. it's such a negative connotation with print, but in reality, print-based business models drive a lot of revenue, even though it's dying off now. And most companies that did print did only print. They weren't broadcast publishers. They weren't new media publishers. They just did print. And as that model kind of dies off, all of these print publishers, ourselves included, suffer from one very big thing. You have a pretty large staff and a lot of overhead to print a newspaper. Yes. You have to fund a newsroom. You have to pay your freelancers, your stringers, your photographers, all of this stuff. And honestly, the technology to print a newspaper or do all your pre-press preparation isn't cheap. The Adobe suites aren't cheap. Yeah. Utilizing a printer isn't cheap. Printing newspapers isn't cheap. On the opposite side, online, all of that stuff is very inexpensive. So simply, you know, from a cost savings perspective and a smart business move perspective, I think you're starting to see the print publishers are being accelerated into these new media technologies online because it's going to save them a lot of money and they can't afford not to. Even if they don't realize the real value in it, you know, most people in print think, wow, why would I want to do this all online if my end goal is print? That's not really the focus so much for me. It's about having that central database storage of information and being able to transport it to any other system you want, display it on any device you want, send it anywhere you want, and control how it's going to look. When a print publisher realizes that, it's kind of like a dream because they've struggled throughout the history of print publishing to control what it looks like when it hits the page. Well, with XML, you can have ultimate control. And I think that has a lot to do with this rapid adoption of XML everywhere.
So are you sharing content now between the various local papers, right? Because they're different geographies.
Right, they are. Like, for example, we launched Philadelphia Weekly. We're launching Atlantic City. They're both in the same CMS system, literally shared databases with various rules that keep everything separate. But it's very nice. As an administrator, you can log on and manage one site or log on and manage all sites. You can control exporting of data for one site or all sites, which is really wonderful. You know, for us, the CMS allows us to play content from our different products against each other and drive traffic against each other online, which is, part of the goal we have here of just driving more traffic. But because all of our websites are now in the same system, we're modifying our print workflows to take advantage of the cross workflow technologies that we've built, and we'll basically be able to produce all of our products online and in print the way that we've been talking about for Philadelphia Weekly, which, you know, to us kind of is that's the dream. That's the holy land to get there. Reduces our costs and our overhead substantially. We can basically publish more with the same amount of staff and resources. And to us, that's huge. We've got to drive more traffic, more products, earn more dollars because as print revenue dies off, you know, nobody's paying $5,000 for a full page ad on the web. It just isn't happening. Yeah. We got addicted to that in print. You know, we got addicted to high value advertising. So now it's about doing more with less and pushing more volume through. You know, one of the exciting things about clickability when it comes to an integration perspective, we talked a lot about what we just did for web to print and print to web for our newspaper products. Well, our websites do a whole bunch of stuff that our newspapers could never do. Newspaper can't display photo galleries, interactive photo galleries. Newspaper can't run video, can't play audio. There's no interaction where you can actually contribute content into a physical newspaper page, obviously. So there's a whole bunch of functionality and concept of audience and driving traffic and page views and everything that just doesn't exist in a print world. And it, you know, caused us to build a lot of things online that weren't necessarily something we traditionally did as a weekly arts and entertainment newspaper. You know, so if I would say the first big goal for us was to get this cross flow down, the cross workflow. The second big goal from us is using XML to integrate other services. You know, for example, we use WordPress for blogs, and we keep WordPress on a completely separate service from the clickability servers from the clickability platform. WordPress has a great feature, export to XML, which allows you to essentially export your posts to a standardized XML schema. And we have about 4 or 5 blogs for Philadelphia Weekly. They all get pulled into this XML file. We had a programmer create a PHP application that does a little bit of manipulation to get rid of some XML that isn't necessary or some posts that are older that come by default from WordPress. And then that PHP application breaks it up into 5 megabyte chunks so the importer can handle it, and it FTPs them off to Clickability, where they're automatically sucked in through Clickability schema. The blog posts are automatically created and published. And that was really exciting for us. It allowed us to take it allowed us to take our blog content and seamlessly weave it into our website. Like if you go to philadelphiaweekly.com on the homepage, there's an aggregator box that just is constantly cycling the most recent blog posts from 4 or 5 different blogs. If you go into like arts and entertainment or into the music section, you'll see, you know, the style blog entries in the page right next to articles that came from print. So it was really nice, you know, with a limited staff, we have writers now that just wrote for print, writing for the web and writing on their blogs. And we needed to be able to weave that together and maximize it. Having a bunch of separate audiences in 4 different places wasn't the goal. It was kind of try and draw all these things together. So that was a real successful integration that few people have done even on this platform. We've been getting calls actually asking, how'd you do it? And because of WordPress's XML support and Clickability's XML support, it was relatively easy. It cost us very little dollars to get that done. Another example we have is our video hosting. All of our video files live on a completely separate hosted service called Twistage. And basically, we upload all of our videos to Twistage. There's an XML feed that is constantly coming out of Twistage with all the updated info. Clickability connects to that and pulls that feed in live, hashes it to make sure what's new and what's not, and it pulls in the links to the video, the thumbnails, the description, the tags, and any other keywording, and that's all available to us in Clickability, which is great. Our editors can manipulate it, add to it, rewrite it, write headlines, but when you actually display that content on the front end and there's a video player, that video player isn't on the same system as the rest of the web page you're seeing. And that's completely seamless. We just upload videos and bang, they pop up on the website. And again, that was all made possible through that XML exchange.
Wow.
Yeah, we've integrated a lot. We do a service called Inman News, which is real estate property, real estate news, you know, like kind of canned content.
Yeah.
That comes to us in a glorified RSS feed. Many people are familiar with that. RSS feed's a, you know, a standard of XML or a schema created for RSS, which was fairly simple and automatically publishes this content to our real estate page. And then there's the big one, the one that we did that not many people do ever, and I don't know if I'd suggest it. we actually built our own MLS property data mechanism. We're one of the very few, if not the only, companies in Pennsylvania that actually has an MLS property subscription that's not a realtor or a broker. Like, we're not a real estate company, obviously. But we were able to talk to the MLS board and get them to sell us a license so that we could pull a stream of data from their MLS servers. Some of you, and you yourself, Liz, may be familiar with the RETS, R-E-T-S, standard of XML.
Yeah.
RETS is basically, I think the birth of RETS was to basically have a schema defined for all real estate information. So that if you were an MLS company in any part of the country, and there's different MLS groups that control different areas all over the country. PA has its own MLS group called Trend MLS of Pennsylvania. And we had to learn a lot about what RETS compliant data was. I mean, you know, it's relatively new to this a year ago and really getting heavily into XML. And it was, all of a sudden, we got hit over the head with this very standardized, you must follow what we say, you cannot change, deviate from our path kind of information. It took a little bit of research, but basically what it came down to is the RETS information, the MLS data information is massive. I mean, there's so many data fields, it's mind-boggling. And you have to use what's called a RETS-compliant client in order to access a RETS server. Thankfully, there is one called Conduit, which is freely available to anyone who wants to use it. And you basically program a query into this client that on a set interval will pull RETS-compliant XML data based off of your query from the central database. We did that, and we got so much information, we went cross-eyed. So I called up my developer again and said, listen, I need you to create a PHP MySQL application that will take this data feed pulled down, shove it into MySQL, and just trim out all the stuff we don't need. It was just very difficult to form the queries properly so that we only got the very little specific information we needed. And MLS does not give you longitude and latitude by default with our contract, because we're not a realtor, so they wouldn't give us location data. So we needed to actually geocode our own locations. yeah, which is great. And this gets us into another discussion about XML, because geocoding has become like a really exciting thing that we're doing. We'll talk a little bit more in a minute about how we're bringing XML to other devices with geocoding. But basically, so Conduit pulls down this huge amount of XML. A little PHP app stores it, trims out what we don't need, queries the Google API for geocoding, stores the longitude and latitude, takes the output and splits it up into 5 megabyte chunks, and FTPs off to our clickability server again. These XML files, where every night at midnight there's a process waiting to scoop them up, hashes them against our existing data to make sure we're not importing anything that is already there, and sucks in our real estate data. And you can go see this at phillyweekly.com/real estate. You'll see the property info and the search box and everything. The big thing that, in my opinion, on the geeky side that sets us apart, most people would never realize this, we didn't go to an MLS vendor and buy a product and plug it into our website. We actually built the whole thing from scratch. And I don't know if I'd suggest it because it's very involved. When we talked to original vendors of MLS products that like did this for you, they told us they were nuts. They're like, listen, we're like $1 million a year business doing this for real estate people and other companies because it's too complex for you guys to deal with. We got through it. It's working. But there's probably an easier way to do it. we were not in a situation where we could afford to spend, you know, thousands of dollars a month paying someone else to do this for us. So we spent a little bit of money up front, and now the thing kind of runs just on the cost of the license of the information. But that's one example of completely standard XML that is the industry standard for real estate. I was really surprised to find that. I thought real estate was pretty, you know, not that organized to have their own standard for all of their data, but it's a very rigid standard, and we were able to successfully integrate it, which is another big thing for us.
Yeah, no, that's tremendously cool. I had no idea you all were doing that.
Yeah, that's why I said when I started sitting down and going through these notes, I was like, damn, we've really done a lot in 2 years' time. You know, we went literally from a newspaper publisher in every sense of the word to acting like a media publisher and building the information systems behind it to be successful. You know, if there's one thing that I would say to any print publisher who's doing what we're doing, transitioning to new media or new distribution channels for their content, don't underestimate the information systems that do this. If you don't build the foundation, you won't be successful. I'm very confident of that. You know, the stuff that we tried to do before we kind of got our head straight with, you know, how we should build our information systems was a struggle all the time. You know, money that shouldn't have been spent, overworking of people that was unnecessary. If you work to plan your information systems, things should fall into place and work well together. If you find that you're constantly struggling in your workflow, you're constantly struggling to integrate or to get this thing online, I would tell you, you know, take a hard look at your workflow and take a hard look at the information systems that drive that workflow. Because that's where you're going to, you know, kind of regain the efficiency and make everyone less stressed and frustrated is by making sure your information system works correctly.
So how did your workflow change?
The biggest thing for us, I would think, you know, for me, from an overall perspective, the first big change for us was the switch from Quark to InDesign in 2006. Not that Quark can't do what InDesign does, it just couldn't at the time, and we were fairly certain we wanted to partner with Adobe. Those of us in print media realize Adobe is kind of like the center of the universe. They invented PostScript, they invented PDF, they invented most of what print publishers use to get their job done. So we were like, you know what, we're gonna go with who we think's the best, and kind of went with it. I say that was a big change for us because some of the print folks out there might you know, identify with this. We had a very critical path workflow. This had to be done before the next step could be done, before the next step could be done. You know, we're a weekly newspaper, so we have a roughly 6-day cycle for producing the product, which any daily newspaper would laugh at because they have about 16 hours instead of 6 days. And, you know, we really wanted the editors and everything to understand that we wanted to move to a system where writers could write, editors could edit, layout people could lay out, and art directors could add artwork and stuff all at the same time, where they didn't have to wait until the page was laid out before the pictures went in, or the stories would be written before the page was laid out. And Adobe's live edit workflow allowed us to do that, and that's really why we got into it. The matching of InDesign and InCopy allows you to be writing and editing and laying out at the same time and sharing all that information over a network. So that was a big change for us. You know, it meant that we could essentially get things done on the same day instead of having to wait till the next day and things like that. I think it's been fairly well adapted across all three of our editorial workflows. It probably could be more closely adapted and better utilized, but I think we're probably going to graduate to a new level of XML we'll talk about in a minute before we finish, you know, the 100% rollout of the live edit workflow. So I'd say, the big thing was for editors and writers, changing up what they did. At that time, we started introducing the concept of creating separate titles for web headlines. You know, a lot of people realize the headline you write for print that's kind of pithy and smart and a pun doesn't work online. It gets lost in search results and all those things. And we also had our art directors starting to place images that were web-ready off the layouts to the side so that they could be, you know, when it came time to put this all online, we had the web headline hidden in there. We had the artwork that was supposed to go online hidden in there. And it was kind of the beginnings of weaving together the two different workflows. And then the next huge step for us in the effect of our workflow was what we talked about early on in this call, you know, being able to literally hit export out of the print layouts, get XML, run it through a quick automated process, and have it be imported automatically into the web to be published. That's huge. And the same thing in reverse. There's whole sections of our print product that are never prepared for print. They're simply all put into the website, exported into print. It automatically lays out the pages ready for print. Someone proofreads it, minor copy fitting if necessary, or they chop up chunks for the different areas of the book, and it's on its way. I mean, those were, you know, people may not realize it even within my own organization, but those are big steps in becoming a media publisher and not just being a print publisher. And that's, you know, again, speaks to those information systems underlying. If you don't build them right, you won't be able to do these sorts of things.
Right.
Right. So how did your team adapt to these changes?
Well, I'd say relatively well. I mean, you know, from the web folks' perspective, they're really happy because, this is something...
they're doing a lot less.
Well, that's actually not true. We're doing... Really? Everybody in our organization's doing more today than they did a year ago.
They're just more effective.
Exactly. And that's it. We're taking that gain in efficiency and putting it right back into the business. we're not telling people to take a day off, right, or not coming to work today. And, you know, a lot of people who are dealing with this online and digital media realize you need to produce more content online than you ever would for a print product, even a daily product, really. And the content you create is interactive and it's multimedia, and that stuff takes a lot more production than just writing an article or editing photographs. So we really, we realized we couldn't grow our organization by 20%, especially in this economy with advertising revenues down. So we really knew that these folks were going to have to step up. I think it's been a relatively slow adoption. You know, I'm an IT implementer, so I kind of hope that everybody would grab a hold of it and run and just go. and that's usually not the case with any user. With traditional journalists and writers and editors, it's been a little bit more of a struggle. But, you know, Philly Weekly's been up for over 4 months now, and it's become commonplace to be able to produce the way we produce. People are getting comfortable with it. Editors are being assigned to edit their newspaper section as well as their website section, which is a big deal for us. I'm a big believer that your editor should manage your content. It doesn't matter what channel it's distributed through. And we're really starting to gain some traction in that. So, like, the website sections are better edited now because they have professional editors editing them. It's not the web team trying to get it done for them, which is a big deal. We have an online editor at Philadelphia Weekly that started a little over a year ago. That was a new position for us. He's been very happy with the way things are going because it's a system he can easily utilize. He can, delegate content to different people to be handled. He can easily webify all this content. And in controlling the publishing of it online with our content management system is awesome. I mean, you can auto-publish things and you can automatically tell them to display and when they should not display. And you can set up schedules for rotating content. So I think some people kind of are starting to see the future and getting excited about it. And then you definitely still have some people that are later adopters that are frustrated that, don't necessarily see why would I write something for the web. But we see a time in 12 to 24 months where our revenue is about split. Right now it's still more in print than it is in web, but we're going to come to a point where they're even, and we believe we're going to come to a point where we're doing more revenue online. So it's a process of shepherding along those users and editors, but it is important that you get conceptual buy-in at your top, whether, whatever your managers are in your type of business. Those managers, in my case, editors, publishers, really have to believe and buy in and motivate their staff and make sure everyone follows guidelines, or it can be a very messy situation. I would say, from what I've heard of the second implementation we're doing at Atlantic City, the editorial staff has been even more accepting than PW was and are really excited to kind of take control and use this stuff. So I'd have to say that, I kind of feared a nightmare scenario where we'd build this thing and everyone would kind of tell us where to go. And that hasn't happened. I think it's not like a good thing that the economy that we're in or the fact that newspapers are closing up all over the place, but it certainly has shaken some people's eyes open to realize this isn't a fad or a trend. This isn't a bunch of geeks telling you should do this stuff online. This is about the core of your business and your business model. It has very little to do with technology, except for the fact that technology implements it all. It's about business models and workflow and efficiency. I think that, for the most part in the print business, everybody needs to take a good hard look at their MBAs and their business school information and how to properly operate and run business models, and they'll find themselves navigating out of the dark waters a lot faster. Those kind of touchstones and milestones and things that were hard and fast in print for 100 years, it's all liquid now. Everything's changing all the time, from the way content's produced and delivered to how audience consumes it. And if you're not adjusting your business model to meet that, you're going to have a struggle.
Exactly. So I was going to say, with the second implementation, in Atlantic City. Did your team there talk to the Philadelphia team? So you think maybe they were a little more accepting because they'd seen some other people go through it and it's not as bad.
Right. Well, it's actually interesting. We've encouraged a lot of communication between. We've even sent editors to little trainings for video and things together. You know, I would always like to see more collaboration, especially when you have two editors that do the same job at two different offices. And we've seen some of that, not as much as I'd like, but definitely some of that, editors talking and stuff. Atlantic City, I think, is a little more accepting for a couple reasons. They were the first to transition to InDesign, so they've essentially been doing more web-centric stuff for a little bit longer, about 6 months longer than PW. But Atlantic City, I don't know if it's because it's an entertainment town, so heavily entertainment-focused. Those people have been really excited to do stuff online long before a lot of people at our main site. Your Philadelphia Weekly is our largest staff and it's our largest product. But you could almost say it was like a harder struggle here to get people to adopt new media concepts. At Atlantic City, they were doing online audio, like interviews with musicians and acts in Atlantic City, and putting that stuff online years before Atlantic City was. Before Philadelphia Weekly was. They were videotaping the Atlantic City Air Show and putting that online years before Philadelphia Weekly was. So in some respects, I feel like Atlantic City has been a little more aggressive in their adaptation of new media technologies. And, you know, even at our South Philly site, which is the oldest, 52 or 54 years young this year, that newspaper, it's been in that community for a really long time. And those guys were asking us to sell t-shirts and coffee mugs on their website to the local community in 2001. They were like, we need an online store. So we have had those rays of sunshine in our organization where it's like, you know, I really want to do this. How do I get it done online? Unfortunately, in 2001, nobody, you know, especially senior management, didn't believe anyone would actually buy a t-shirt or a coffee mug on the website. So it's there was no real in my opinion, there wasn't really focused investment and focused resources on our web products until 24 months ago. Everything else we did before that was really like, yeah, we're kind of getting ready, but no one knows when the revenue is going to be there, so we're not in a hurry. And no one wanted to overspend ahead of the wave. You know, we were fearful in 2002 of kind of dropping a bunch of money and building a technology that would be completely replaced in a year and wouldn't give us the competitive advantage. So I think by holding off to do some of these, you know, starting in 2006 and then in 07, 08, making these bigger investments was proper. Maybe a year earlier would have put us in a better position, possibly because of what happened in our markets and in the economy. But I think it was the right time to start investing.
No, I think a lot of technology has happened in the last bunch of years.
And, well, it's like they got mature.
You've certainly taken advantage of it.
Yeah, it's you know, to me, it seems like web, and this is probably a fairly broad statement to make, but web technology really grew up in the last 2 years. You could call it Web 2.0 or whatever you want, but the experience of what the internet, I believe, was supposed to be when it started to make big waves in the late 90s has just come to fruition. It's the technologies are there, the broadband internet access is there, and the multimedia delivery capability is there. For you to really build very big interactive products and properties for people online. And that just wasn't possible 5 years ago.
No, it really wasn't. And as we all know, the carriers are building out to take it to even more platforms.
Right. So this is exciting. I have one thing that I'm kind of excited about right now because we're just getting underway with it. And I won't go into full detail on it because you guys will probably see it in about 8 weeks live. But this is cool. iPhone applications.
Yes, I was going to ask you.
Yes. I don't know if any of your listeners here are starting to dabble in the world of mobile phone applications, but certainly if you're a media publisher, this is something you want to be thinking about, not just for iPhone, but, you know, experts say there's going to be three times as many mobile phones as computer desktops in a couple of years, and the primary mode for a person to access the internet will be through a mobile phone in 24 months, not through their website. So we really were like, holy crap. We've spent a lot of time focusing on the web, and all of a sudden there's this little tiny device that goes everywhere with everyone that's going to be really impactful to our audience, and the light bulbs just started going off. Well, first of all, you have a problem online. Everyone thinks it's free. Well, on a mobile phone, they don't. People have traditionally always paid for content on their mobile phone and have had no problem doing so. And the carriers are more than happy to deliver it to you for a fee. And that concept is really enticing news organizations because they need revenue badly. And the one thing that we have is content. And if you're moving towards these XML and open systems that can transport data all over the place, you're already prepared to feed those applications and those mobile phones with data. So, you know, it's a very short step to start taking advantage of that. It was a huge step to go from print publishing to publishing online. But it's a small step to go from publishing online to mobile because most of the technology is already built. You know, and hopefully, if you went for an XML-based open system, that rings true. There are CMSs out there that are closed or less adopted and not using standards that would make some things, you know, more difficult to deal with. But we decided, you know, iPhone is really popular with apps. People are excited about them. We're an arts and entertainment company. So our proof of concept of moving into this space with mobile products is going to be an iPhone application. And it's going to use location-based awareness. I don't know how many people are familiar with the iPhone SDK, but the software development kit for iPhone, especially the 3.0 that just came out, includes full XML support within the mobile operating system on the iPhone and SQL databases on the iPhone itself, which means you can make a call to an RSS feed. You can actually do this with JSON also, but we'll leave that out of this conversation about XML. But you can make a straight call through HTTP, HTTPS to an RSS feed or to an XML file, retrieve that to the phone, store it, and then start making calculations off of it, whether that be address information, location information, whatever the case may be. We realize that this is pretty big because we've got a system that can do all those things. It's a small, small expense to build the app. We can already export all the data we need in XML. We have geocoded location information. So how do you know, what do we do? If you look on PhiladelphiaWeekly.com, you know, you start to think look at the way we're thinking. We have communities of interest based around food and drinking or restaurants, around events, around music. And that's, you know, part of the utility function of our website is the ability for you to go search the restaurant guide, search the bar guide, see what happy hour specials are available, see what bands and musicians are playing tonight, go to the events section and see, you know, what galleries are opening or what art shows are going on. Those are all things that would be awesome if they were in your pocket. You didn't have to be in front of a computer screen. You could pull out your phone and be like, I'm here. What's going on? That's very, very, very powerful.
I wanted this for a long time.
Everybody has. This is, you know, back in the day of the Palm Pilot, this was the dream that you were going to be able to take packaged content, put it right onto your little PDA, and it's at your fingertips wherever you go. Obviously, the shortfall of that was the lack of an internet connection to keep it up to date. But again, the technology has matured to the point where now, wow, great, we did all this web stuff online that's open and it's XML-based and we can transport it. And look, these mobile phones are coming up to a point where they are adopting the same standards of data management and storage. So that's really exciting. Now we have an opportunity to kind of take this information that is much more valuable when it's based on where you're standing than it is simply on a website. The other thing that's big too, and print publishers will recognize with this, when you can put an advertisement right in someone's phone where they're at a point where they're in within a couple of minutes of making a spending decision, I'm going here for a drink, I'm going here for dinner, I want a hotel room over here, I want to go to this art opening tonight. When you can position an ad right there, the value of that advertising greatly outweighs what people, you know, traditional banner advertising, website advertising, even behavioral targeted advertising on the web is nowhere near as valuable as putting an ad right in front of somebody when they're about to make a decision to buy something. Your mobile phone allows you to do that. And that's a huge, huge, huge concept for advertising-driven revenue. And the other side of it too, it's important. It gives you the ability for you to put your brand into people's lifestyles everywhere they go and start weaving it into everything they do. For a company like mine, that's a big deal. We're free products for the most part. We really need you to utilize our stuff and go see our advertisers and show up at the parties we promote and the events that we do, or we're not making money. So that's, you know, really, really interesting for us. It was a little bit of a struggle to kind of get the vision adopted here and for everyone to get on board with it. The iPhone app that we're currently building, we're starting next week, will revolve around one of those communities of interest we just talked about. We'll allow you to kind of open it, know where you are, and it'll kind of tell you what's going on around you in a specific type of category. It's pretty cool. You know, the stuff we talked about with the SDK on the iPhone and how you can kind of pull XML and store it, in the end, we actually decided not to do that. We actually decided not to utilize the SQL support on the phone for one very good reason. iPhone is now three versions of hardware. They're substantially different in what they're capable of doing as far as performance goes. If we were to build the iPhone app to literally pull XML right from clickability, store it, and do proximity logic on the actual phone, the original version of the iPhone would take 30 seconds or more to return your results, which we consider as poor performance and is really not usable. On the iPhone 3GS, it would be like 2 seconds, and bang, there's your info. So in order to get around that, we kind of went back to this idea of using an intermediary server, and basically clickability exports the information to XML, enter PHP MySQL again, picks up the file, stores it in MySQL. We have a proximity logic on that same server written in Perl that queries against the MySQL database of information for all the content that's going out there. And the iPhone actually makes an HTTPS call to a gateway on that server. The proximity logic pulls the information, figures out what's closest, and beams back to the phone a set of XML, a stream of XML, that is the information that you're looking for. And that actually can provide us better performance across the three different types of hardware. And you know, we're really confident that it's going to work well, it's going to perform well, it's going to be great for our advertisers because we're going to sell featured placement within those listings based, you know, basically if someone's close to you, you're going to bump up to the top of that as a featured listing. And we're actually going to sell the application. It's a big step for us because we're all free products. Our newspapers are free on the streets in any of the cities we've talked about. You can pick them up. You can hit our website and utilize every function of it without paying a dime. On the new websites as they're rolling out at Philly Weekly and AC, there is profiles where you can actually track all the contributions you've made to the site, whether it's an event you put in or a video you uploaded. It's not full-blown social networking because we don't believe that we're a social network. We just want to integrate to them. But there's massive functionality, a lot of content to consume, and it's all free. You know, it's all advertising-based revenue model. Well, when we shifted to the iPhone app, we were like, wait a minute. We really need revenue. I mean, there's no question about it. We need to be making money off of new lines of business. And this is a new line of business. And the way we looked at it is, you know, 99 cents for an application, chances are what we're providing you and the information is going to help pay for that application the first time you use it, especially if it's a restaurant or bar or something along those lines where we're providing a coupon or a discount or something like that. And this idea that people are used to paying for items on mobile. And, you know, a lot of experts, especially in the news industry, have been saying over the past couple months, boy, I wish we charged for our iPhone, for our iPhone application. You know, because putting it online is one thing, and paywalls and what's restricted content, what's pay-for content, what's micropayments is all a big discussion for news sites these days, and it's a real struggle. But on the mobile phones, people realize you're providing something as a convenience that's above and beyond the utility function of your newspaper or your website, and generally people are willing to pay for that. So for us, this application is a proof of concept in a lot of ways, that we can actually do it with our technology, that we can actually develop our own software like an iPhone application on mobile, and that we can captivate an audience and sell, get advertising or revenue dollars around that audience is a big deal. You know, for us, it's inventing a new product and a new revenue stream that this company's never done. And to me, it's one of the coolest things you could do with the new website platform that you built.
I agree.
Yeah, so that's
exciting. I look forward to getting to try it out when I come to Philly.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see that. You know, programming starts next week on it, and we should see in about 8 to 10 weeks. Hopefully it'll be available in the iTunes store, and I'll keep you posted on that. Anybody coming to Philadelphia, make sure you Google or search for Philadelphia in the App Store and see what we're putting out there.
Very cool. Wow. Well, so I look forward to even talking with you again.
Yeah.
I have it already planned for in like 12 to 24 months so that we can see where you are.
Yep.
Then.
You know, I bet you we'll be looking back to you before 12 months are up because one of the things that's come up repeatedly now is what can we do for cost savings? Well, I'd really love to not ever pay Adobe another dime for a piece of software. And, you know, you and I have discussed a little bit about how we could kind of do this entire process with 100% XML. So right. I'm really interested in exploring that. And another thing that you said to me too is that your invoicing and stuff like that is all XML, and it kind of formats based off of what you want to display it as. Well, we're moving towards e-invoicing, cutting down on paper usage in the office to be green as well as to save money. I'm really interested to see, you know, what we can do to take it to the next level with XML and eliminate more redundant, unnecessary business processes and kind of reduce costs wherever we can. So I think it'll be before I think we'll be done with these website projects and chomping at the bit to save more money and utilize more before 12 months is up.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to follow up with the print black box publishing, see how we can help you with that.
Yeah.
But wow, this is, I'm so excited to hear all of this.
You know, when I looked back over this, like I was putting my notes together and everything, I was like, damn, this is pretty cool, pretty exciting. Anybody that has worked in print for any period of time over the last 50 years would probably appreciate, you know, kind of what we're doing here. And the biggest thing that I would say to anyone who's like, wow, how can we do that? Just start researching. There's so much XML out there, you just don't even realize it. We didn't realize it until, you know, it's like you start to discover a little and then it's like falling down the rabbit hole. Before you know it, you're like, oh my God, everything can be reduced to XML.
Right.
You could transport it everywhere.
Yours is kind of the first print success story that I've heard in, you know, months.
Well, now all we got to do is make a ton of money off it. And then we'll be considered a business success too.
There we go. Exactly. I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah. I'm happy to think that what we've engaged in over the course of 2 to 3 years, focusing on XML and utilizing it and kind of trying to morph our business into the proper structure and model to make money in this new media economy, I get more and more excited about it too as I think about it, you know, because I think, you know, 5 years ago we were like, XML, damn, what do we do with that? We're using it in most almost every facet of what we publish in our workflow, and we're looking to adopt it into other areas of our business as best we can. So, you know, when you look at the big picture, it's like, dang, you know, we've started to accomplish what we set out to do all those years ago.
Very cool. Wow. And I appreciate your taking the time to share it with us and everybody else who's going to be listening. And this is a great story.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to following up in as soon as you're ready.
Awesome. Look forward to working together again.
Thanks, Keith.
All right. Talk to you later, Liz.
Bye.
The PubRide Podcast is a production of Single Sourcing Solutions in San Jose, California. Copyright 2009. Single Sourcing Solutions.